Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld, and this is Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, we have Matthew Beyer from Minneapolis, a young man who has written a fabulous novel called The Breeders. Let me just go introduce him. Matthew, hello.
Hi there.
How's life up in Mini tonight?
It's going well. It's a little bit chilly.
Okay.
Going well otherwise.
Okay, great. Well, I'm sitting here, and I don't want to tell you. I live on the beach. I'm staring out at the ocean right now over my computer.
I know.
And it's 78 degrees, but it's always 78 degrees here if it's not pouring down rain. All right, enough about me. Matthew, this book was fun. It was a lot of fun. I kind of fell upon you, I think, through Facebook or some other website I troll on,
yep.
Young writers.
Yep.
And I find a lot of people. And I was totally surprised. How did you get into writing?
I have been doing it kind of for fun ever since I was very young. It was kind of a two-track thing with film production. That was kind of always my life's dream, and I did a couple of years in film school out in the L.A. area. And with that kind of came the whole storytelling thing, and that all started with Jurassic Park, actually, back when I was 9 years old.
Uh-huh.
And that is what sparked the story gene in me.
Right.
So I was kind of always doing it younger, when I was younger, and but I got serious about it about 8 years ago when I was actually probably in high school, so a little further back, but started writing seriously my freshman year of college. So.
Wow, good. Good. So what else have you done besides, what led you up to The Breeders? Now, we're going to talk in depth about The Breeders in a few minutes, but what led you up to writing this book? And we're going to talk, you know, about that. So let's go ahead and what did you do before Breeders?
Well, I have been, that was actually kind of the project I started in high school, and I'm still chiseling away at it.
Uh-huh.
It's a series of about 7 books, I think, kind of a young adult thing, not actually gay and lesbian focused, but those books were what I started with, and then The Breeders came along because of the National Organization for Marriages ad in 2008,
mm-hmm.
which was their A Storm is Coming commercial, regarding Proposition 8 and gay marriage out in California, and
right.
that just was sort of amusing to me, but also, you know, it just made me think, okay, what could really be this terrifying about gay marriage?
Right.
So then that led to The Breeders, which was actually a total career experiment for me. So I was writing it to see if anyone would read it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. So I gave it my best shot.
Well, there's about 20 people reading it down here. I'm going to clue everyone in. Matthew got really excited when I told him this. The Stonewall National Museum and Archives, America's largest gay and lesbian circulating library and historical archive in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, does a monthly book group. And I happen to be the spouse of the person who runs it. And, I've had this scheduled for a couple months now because we had a delay in the production of the book. And I look over to my partner's half of the desk. We have one giant partner desk. And I'm looking over there, and he's got a copy of The Breeders, and his is on Kindle, and mine is on, I've got a live pre-copy, and I'm going, why are you reading The Breeders? And he goes, we're discussing it May 1st at the Stonewall book discussion group. And I think this is the first time this has been done, because it's so quick. Is this the first book discussion group? I mean, is this the first time that you know of?
Oh, this is the first time.
Yeah.
Anything like that has ever happened for sure.
well, I'll
shocking.
Make sure they all. It was. I was surprised. I'm sure you were just blown away. he found it in a review somewhere, and they actually discussed it and voted on it. It was
interesting. Yeah, I didn't know. You didn't tell me how that came about.
That's why we have interviews to surprise you. You know, to make you feel good.
Yeah, awesome.
Right.
Great.
So it's monthly, and it's a fun thing. They're all over the country. They actually talk to each other. Okay. Off with that.
Okay.
So that was my commercial. May 1st, Stonewall National Museum and Archive. The event is free and open to the public. 1300 East Sunrise Boulevard in Fort Lauderdale. For more information, just buzz me, nateklarfeld@gmail.com, and I will give you the directions and time to show up. That's enough. Okay. The breeders, for those people out there listening and in the chat room, we have a whole bunch of people in the chat room tonight for some reason. The breeders is kind of like turns the tables, like on what would happen if heterosexuals were in the minority, if they were afraid, if they had to look at, feel that they, what they were doing would be an outing, if somebody made them uncomfortable and things like that. So the breeders turns it around where the only heterosexuals around are there for like a backup plan because the gays have won the bio wars and have figured out a way to make people without people. Go ahead and give us an explanation of that, because I probably didn't do it very well.
No, you did pretty well. Let's see. Yeah, it takes place. Originally, I thought it was going to be much more of a just switch around, ha-ha-ha funny thing. And it turned out when I started actually writing it and getting into it, I had to start thinking through how this might have happened. When I started actually thinking through the logistics of the plot, it actually became much more serious, even though there's still the satire element to it because it is somewhat ridiculous in the, you know, the plot.
Right.
But, you know, I hopefully made it so that it seems somewhat plausible.
Right.
And so, it kind of takes place in a future that isn't actually all that different from ours, mostly because there were sterilization trends and all in about, you know, 100 years from now.
Uh-huh.
People were sterilizing themselves for population control reasons, and gay people sort of usurped government power. And then there was some religious terrorism going on that eventually got squashed, and then the gay people took over. And I actually purposefully left the book not terribly detailed on all that stuff, partially because it bogged down the pace, and also because my characters actually wouldn't be thinking about all that stuff because that's in their past. So
right.
That was a conscious decision to leave it kind of vague, the history and all that.
But you want to know something?
Yeah.
In reading the book, you can, just because what we're going through with these, you know, anti-gay laws and these don't say gay laws that we're reading in Tennessee and Kentucky, the reader knows the mechanics, you know, the religious terrorism and the stuff like that. We're living the mechanics right now, or we lived the mechanics, or actually some of us are still living it, you know, where they're banning, you know, you've got a ban coming up. So I think the mechanics are for the people who are living it in the now, and they understand it. The it's already 100 years or two, I couldn't remember how many generations, in the past this happened. So they're not, you're right, they're not thinking about it, but the reader is. I mean, when I read about some of this stuff, I said, oh yeah, it's they're trying to do the last gasp. I mean, it's kind of like the, you know, the don't say gay, or the adoption law, anti-adoption laws, or the you can't be a teacher if you're gay, which is something I lived through. I'm a lot older than you. This all just kind of comes into a very, very scary, almost a reverse 1984. I mean, at times when I was reading this, I was getting an Orwellian feel to this bio police, you know, like there was a thought police out there. So it did create that kind of a tension, a lot, and there's a lot of tension. Well, there's a lot of tension in the book, but why don't you talk about the different tensions, okay?
Well, first tension, kind of the main tension I would think of the book is that it actually is about two heterosexuals, so it's not about gay people directly. And the tension comes in that it is illegal to reproduce, and people are supposed to be engineered so that they are sterile, and there are genetic reversal procedures that they can do to make that otherwise, so that humans can carry life for, you know, the gay men down the street who need a woman to gestate their child.
Right.
And so nobody is actually supposed to naturally get pregnant, but in the first page of the book,
Yeah.
There's some kind of bloody hints that it happened for this one main character. And so that's the immediate tension, that she might be pregnant, and later when she realizes she is, they face a choice of whether to succumb to the government regime, which is getting much more genocidal, if you will. It's kind of getting scary, and so they have to face the choice of whether to fight the system and be true to themselves and know what their values are, or just let the machine kind of take them over. So, that's most of the tension throughout the book, I think.
Well, there's some family tensions too. You know, her father, the doctor.
So
that all kind of pulls in different directions, and then you have people that aren't necessarily buying the company line. There's some friends that are like underground resistance people. So there's a lot of these, two sides of every coin thing. You have some great words in here that you made up. I guess you meant heterosteroles and fail-safes. Explain what a fail-safe is.
A fail-safe is a heterosexual male, which they are kept around as fertile, because I have in the book the females, which are the heterosexual females, and actually all females are sterile to begin with, and so they are heterosteriles. But the fail-safes are the men who are actually always fertile and could reproduce in the case of an emergency. So
they're the backup.
That's kind of the terminology I start with, and hopefully people catch on to it.
Right. Well, no, I mean, it's very simple. I mean, you figure out what heterosterol is. And I love where you write straight rights protests. There's straight rights protesters are pop up all over, like gay rights protesters. And you kind of see that this is the reversal of roles isn't always very pretty. You know, it's not a pretty... Go ahead.
Yeah, I think I wanted particularly to be clear that there are, not all gay people in this book are villains.
Right.
They clearly are the government, and yes, that's the major villain in this book, but...
Right.
You know, part of it was very important to me to include extremely normal, kind, loving gay people. And people that, fell somewhere in the middle, or that could be swayed one way or another. There's a young character in the book that I actually envision swaying toward the good side eventually. Just a minor character, but think, it's important because we have that in this day and age, and I think there are a lot of people, gay or straight, who just want to promote either a dialogue or, peace between the two different parties.
Sure. You mentioned that the National Organization of Marriage video commercial, The Coming Storm, which is exactly what the first sentence of the book is about. On the other side of the coin, it's something you just mentioned, was I just saw the Mormon parents of gay children's It's Get Better video. Have you seen that?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it just came out.
Awesome. I haven't seen that.
Well, they're struggling, and they're like, it's like an evolving thing. They know it's against the church's teachings. They know that, but they're not throwing their children out. They're not, and it's a very moving video. And I see what you were just speaking about, people who aren't, it's not black and white. And when it comes home,
no, definitely not. And I grew up very Catholic, and my parents are very Catholic and extremely loving people. I couldn't have asked for better parents. And they, we've actually been having in the past year or so some very intense discussions about, differing facets of our belief systems. And it's been challenging at times, but at the same time, we are coming to a common ground that, it's very productive. And I think, honestly, I think that needs to happen on a much wider scale with people because, I do think it's easy to become intolerant of people who don't agree with us just because, and it's, so I think, there's a delicate balance to be figured out and I'm hoping the book kind of touches on that, though. I didn't want to make any huge statement with the book, but
right. Well, the book is basically, you know, sexual orientation turned around.
Yeah,
but it's still sexual orientation because the heteros are expressing their sexuality in their own natural born this way thing, and then of course politics. And you know, one of the things that I constantly tell my more conservative friends, though they seem to be dwindling lately, I guess because I'm pushing them away, is that when they complain about the government, I'd stop them and I say, wait, you are the government. We are the government. We have elected these people. We have a voice. You know, the meetings are open. You can go and voice your opinion. We are the government. And in many ways, that is lost today on a lot of people for various reasons. But we just, I don't know if it's apathy or it's we're just so busy trying to make a living, trying to control our, you know, our iPod, our Apple products have taken us over.
Oh my God, that's been a problem for me lately, for sure.
I have a relationship with Siri. I'm seriously talking to her more than
I don't
than,
have Siri yet. I'm waiting for the next update to get Siri, but.
Well, mine happened. I was forced into getting a new phone, and Siri came into my life today. And I realized today that I had not talked to Siri and not written down. I had written down something in the calendar without speaking it into that. And I don't know if I don't want to get too far off on this, but it's very scary.
Oh no, that's fine.
Siri thanks you a different way. I have not had her thank me twice. I live to serve. Your pleasure is all the thanks I need. These are the things. And, you know, it's
amazing what we've become dependent on, huh?
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that's one of my Apple products that's sucking my life on.
Yeah.
Okay.
I
know exactly what you're saying. Don't even ask. We're all guilty of it. And for some reason, which I have yet to figure out, gay people are more susceptible to buying Apple products than the hetero norm. This is my...
I believe that could be true, and I believe there are some certain apps that gay people created that got, but, you know, I think I found that too. It seems interesting.
Right, but I'm just saying, in Fort Lauderdale and in Washington, D.C., I travel between the two cities. I don't want to get off the subject too bad. When I travel between the two cities and I go to a straight Starbucks, there will be Dells and Toshibas and Sonys and a few Apples. If you go to the one in DuPont Circle, or if you come down to Fort Lauderdale and you go into the one in Wilton Manors, it's strictly Apples and iPads. Period.
Yep.
No one has a PC, and I don't think it's because of Grindr. We can say Grindr. We're allowed to say Grindr. Okay, back to the
It is Grindr, definitely, and others. Well, you know, I did just switch to Apple, but I do have a PC. I have to say, I did most of the work on the breeders on.
I did just switch.
So anyway.
Let's talk. Hey,
say that again?
Caller 805, how are you tonight?
Oh, am I caller 805?
Your phone number starts with 805. Hello, say hi to Matthew.
Hey, hi Nate, it's Tony Adams. How are you, babe?
Hi, Tony Adams.
Hey, good, how are you?
Well, good. Hey, listen, you know, speaking of the Apple thing, and that's not why I called in. When I was at a journalist at the gay journalist conference in Houston last month, almost everybody at the table had an Apple or had a Mac of some sort. So yeah, it's a gay thing. But listen, this is a question for the author. Did you, I think some gay couples have this private fantasy that if they could just find a scientific, mechanical, biological way to breed and produce their own children, then we will have achieved real equality. Did you know any couples like that, or was that a private fantasy that spurred you to write this book?
No, I don't. I know some couples who have done the surrogacy thing, and that's, you know, worked out well, and they have beautiful children as a result. For me, it is not something, but, you know, I have seen undercurrents of that, I think, at times. And I think, you know, for me, part of it is that sometimes it does seem like a lot of gay people are trying to fit into the heterosexual paradigm.
About instinct, though. I think, what do you feel about the desire to replicate in terms of a macho basic thing, that it's sort of in us to replicate and to want to see that?
Oddly, I have, and I've thought about this a few times recently because I just had a new niece be born and my nephew's about two now. And I thought, I've never really had the desire or need to do that, and that's totally a personal thing. I have a few times thought about how interesting it would be to see what, what child would come out of me and somebody else. It's never anything I've been particularly propelled to do. I do know that is not the case for a lot of people, and they do want that. And it's it's obviously a challenging thing for gay people and kind of something we have to deal with by nature,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. My husband of 28 years now has no desire for that. But I, being a more Mediterranean macho type, have a very strong desire for it. So we would be reproducing for all the wrong reasons. But I do think it makes for an interesting theme.
Tony, I wanted to introduce Tony to Matthew. Tony is a journalist. You just mentioned he was at a journalist conference. He writes both locally and nationally. Your blog is Farm Boys. Tony, you're still there?
Yeah.
What is your blog?
Farm Boys at farmboysblogspot.blog, whatever. I don't even remember it, but I have a number about
it.
All right. And he's also Father Tony on the Lorico Project. Father Tony is a Catholic priest and one of my fun friends here in Fort Lauderdale. And are you in New York now or not? Where are you?
No, I'll be in New York tomorrow for a week. I have to get photographed for Pride magazine.
Oh, okay.
Where they're doing expose. But I really have to get this book. I'm sorry I have not read it yet, but it sounds fascinating. And
it is.
I always think, what motivates a person to write a book? Did you suddenly say, oh, my God, what a lovely idea, and build it from there, or what?
Well, I started it because of the interest in that National Organization for Marriage commercial, but I actually, the idea of the reversal was what sparked me, and then from there I had to kind of craft something to work around that. And from there, and I knew the ending from the get-go. That was one of the reasons I wrote the book, because I wanted to get to the ending. For me, it's just so fun to do it. It's an extreme challenge to try to make it work, but that's kind of what propels me to do it. It's just so darn fun. This particular book was kind of to see if I could write something that actually worked and resonated, and hopefully I did. So.
Great.
Cool.
Great.
Can't wait to read it. Thank you. I'm off to the school.
Awesome. Nice to talk to you, Tony.
Okay. I'll see you later, Tony. Have a safe trip.
Bye.
Take care. Right. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Okay, great. Now you're going to get some press.
Awesome.
A
great
press guy. Okay. Listen, this is the part where I love to talk about the nuts and bolts and how the sausage is made on writing a book. So many people have come up to me. I have now hosted in live over 150 authors in the Stonewall Library, and I've been doing this for two years and weekly. And now I'm going to ask you, what would you say to a young writer who says, I've got a novel in me, how do I start?
Oh, man, I would say read Stephen King's On Writing, a memoir of the craft, one of the best books I've ever read.
Right.
That will give you the inspiration, perhaps, to start doing it. And then, based on the advice from Stephen King, just write every day if you can, and do, if you aim for 1,000 words, in 2 to 3 months, you'd have a full book written.
Right.
But after that, it is so absolutely important to set it aside a bit, let yourself get distant from it, so when you read it again, you can see the major flaws that are probably in it, because no first draft is perfect.
Right.
and really work on it as much as possible to make it something you want to read. That, I think, is something mm-hmm. I've learned that, you know, for better or for worse, I've written something that I
right.
would like to pick up and read and see in Barnes & Noble.
Right.
So I think that's key. And after that, make sure, depending, you have a lot of options for publishing these days.
Right.
You know, you can try to get an agent and go through the traditional route, or you can do it yourself,
right.
which is very challenging, but you can do it and you can make it work. But
right.
be professional and kind of
right.
treat it as a product and a business, I think
right.
is important if you want to make a living with it.
Right, I agree.
But otherwise,
try to
write from your heart, but also keep in mind the reality of the publishing business and what it will actually entail. So
right. And publishing has changed. You mentioned Barnes & Noble. You probably used to mention Borders and Barnes & Noble. We've already lost one.
Yeah.
Most of the
yep.
gay and lesbian bookstores in the United States are gone. I said most.
Yeah.
There's still a few.
Like six left, I think.
I don't
that
even
know. I'm
afraid to look. You know, I'm afraid to look because every time I look, there's like two or three less.
Yeah, like
and,
the ones that are labeled as such, there's few left.
Right, very few. And I'm guilty of you know, I'm electronic, loving electronic publishing and e-books.
Oh, me too.
I have a few very well-known authors in the last few years that have pulled away from their publishers and agents and gone straight to ebooks. But
really?
These people are, well, these are yep. people who have had 15, 20, 11, 12 books out there already. They already have
yeah.
a following. They already have an email list. And so basically they publish,
yeah.
you can publish right to Kindle, which I don't know if all,
yeah.
all the listeners
and
out
the,
there know.
The,
right.
Yep. But the big challenge there is quality and making
Ooh.
Sure you do professional editing, paper
right.
editing.
Right.
That is absolutely key if we want to make, you know, even out the publishing playing field.
Right.
And, you know, it's definitely changing. And,
right.
you know, I love Barnes & Noble, but I do use a Nook to support them, and I love my Nook.
Right.
But, yeah, it's a...
right.
It'll be very interesting to see how it settles out in about 5 years, I think, you know, kind of like how music did.
Right.
I think books are doing the same thing. They're just
right.
in the earlier stages. So
there are very few record stores. Like there are probably fewer record stores than there are gay bookstores, but yeah, you're right. And then the other thing is the democratization of publishing right now. There is a
yep.
lot of just plain old crap out there that people have just put out throughout, didn't have anyone read it or had a you know good friend read it,
yep.
not a professional editor. Matthew confided in me that the reader's copy that I have has two typos, which I did not find. Usually I find them, but I didn't
yep.
find them. So you, they
but
were very well hidden. Or very
yeah,
well hidden.
It was,
they're getting bad. You know, maybe.
Yeah, you just have to be so careful and...
Right.
No, thank heavens the typos are now corrected, but
right.
it was
did you
costly and
oh,
you
know,
I know.
You
have
and
to be careful.
And you feel terrible. You just feel absolutely terrible.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And for the listeners out there who don't know how proofreaders work, they read the entire book word for word backwards. Did you know that?
I don't know.
I knew that.
I hope so.
No, that's how
that would
do it. Because that way they don't glance over words. Because if you're reading it backwards,
yep.
reading the words, but you're not reading them in order. And then
yep.
I found that out because your brain doesn't put your brain will finish sentences and finish words. Okay, we have about a minute left. You use the word fag in the book.
What, I do.
Yes, you do, and you use.
And
other
I did that because it's sort of. Indicative of a future where we've taken the word and made nothing of it.
Right.
And in the first page, I use the word, and it's actually in a gentle way, I hope, where it's kind of clear that the character referred
right.
to as such.
Right.
It's just
that,
an acceptable thing.
Right.
Yeah.
I did that
because I felt it would be realistic for that future.
It's like the end of dirty words. When you say them enough, they just become, you know, they don't have they
yeah.
lose meaning.
Yep.
Or, of course, in this case, the fags are the ones in control. They're the norm, so they're really there
yeah,
is
and,
no.
And breeders,
right?
Yeah,
yeah
breeders are the bad
right.
people, you know.
All right, listen, we
not
have
bad,
10 seconds
anyway.
left. We have 10 seconds left.
Okay. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, this has been a blast, and hopefully we'll get to meet in person someday since I have Minneapolis people.
Yes,
Everyone, let me know. Thank you so much. I've got a whole chat room full of people. It's been fun. And good night from Fort Lauderdale. Thank you, and good night.
Great, good night. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Yep, bye.
Bye. Yep.